I guess I should first ask you, what is a Queen's Gambit?
It's a kind of dull chess opening where you play the queen pawn to... I don't even know for sure what it is, to tell you the truth. It's diagrammed on the inside of the book on the frontispiece.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it because it made a short title for the book and because it had the reference to a woman in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What sort of person plays chess?
I have mixed feelings about chess players. Sometimes I think they're the dullest people in the world who play a game that convinces them that they're clever because it requires a certain amount of cerebration at a fairly high level. Other times I think they're the most wonderful people in the world. Right now I'm somewhat in between. But when I wrote my novel, I tried to take what I thought was the best thing about chess players, a certain kind of committed braininess, a kind of high-speed and aggressive intelligence. And I tried to present that in the body of a young girl, which meant a lot to me. I think sometimes in doing this book, I was really more wrapped up in the idea of intelligence in women, for which I have an enormous respect and kind of awe at times, more wrapped up in that even than in the game of chess itself. I think that most people take up the game of chess in a very serious way if they have personality problems, that they're trying to stay away from something else in life. At least that's what I did when I got involved in chess as a kid. I was afraid of girls. I was afraid of a lot of things. And chess was a way of getting rid of some of that anxiety by displacing it into something that was relatively safe. In the case of my heroine in my novel, Beth, I'm giving her a hang-up with tranquilizers, which she picks up in an orphanage when she's a little girl, and a difficulty in comprehending sex. One of the things that's most interesting to me in the book, if I can go on about it a minute,
sure, is
paralleling something that I suppose happened to me to some extent, too, when I was a kid. I'm not completely sure of it. But there are two forms of activity that she's learning about simultaneously. One is sex, and the other one is chess. Sex makes no sense to her. It's scary, and nobody will tell her exactly what the rules are. Whereas in chess, she can penetrate, can understand, can comprehend, she can deal with it. And so she develops herself enormously well at chess, while her sexual development remains not retarded exactly, but lost in some kind of a limbo. I'm thinking about doing a sequel to this novel in which I will show her at an older age. I end the novel with her at the age of 19. Show her at a later age in life and show where some of those problems might get worse in her personal life as her chess life dominates more and more of her attention and her time.
It's interesting that you say that many chess players take up chess because they do have personal problems of some form.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to make a blanket indictment of everybody who's good at chess. I've met some very fine people, people whom I like a lot, open, natural, relaxed people who are good chess players. But I've met a lot of other people who are tremendously intense. And I'll tell you, one of the things that led me to write this book, aside from an interest in trying to present a woman, a really, really smart woman for a reader, was my feeling at chess tournaments, which I've played in, despite my not being able to come up with the Queen's Gambit right off the top of my head, where I have felt there has been more competitive excitement, more aggressiveness, crackling around that dumb little high school gymnasium or third-rate hotel ballroom in which chess tournaments are being played, than I have seen in any other kind of activity. I spent a lot of time in pool rooms around pool players playing for big money. I used to shoot nine ball for fairly large sums of money, and I've been around a lot of games, a lot of betting. I made my living gambling for quite a few years. Never seen the intensity and the vicious aggressiveness that chess players occasionally exhibit. To me, it's one of the tensest games in the world. It's so interior, and it's so obscure to people who don't play it, that most people have no conception of this. And one of the things I'm trying to do in writing this novel is give a reader who doesn't know beans about the game of chess some sense of the tremendous excitement that goes on in that game.
Don't you think that many people have a misguided attitude toward chess? It's too complicated, it's too intellectual, therefore I'm not going to learn it. And it would seem to me that, from what I've heard, and I don't play bridge, but I understand that bridge is even more complicated than chess in many respects.
I think probably so. I think it is in a lot of ways. And I think, too, people associate chess with middle-aged professors with dandruff on their tweeds and that kind of thing. I remember the first time I went to a chess tournament, which wasn't until I was in my 30s, I guess. I was astonished at the youth of the people who were there, nervous, young, finger-popping kids in their late teens, early 20s, dominate the game.
I was going to ask you about that. Beth Harmon in your novel is indeed a child chess prodigy, and child chess prodigies seem to turn up frequently. Bobby Fischer, for example.
Sure.
Why do you think that happens?
I don't know for sure. I think possibly because it's a cerebral, intellectual thing. You get kids who are geniuses at mathematics, and you get kids who are geniuses at musical composition. You never get a kid genius as a poet. Say, it just doesn't happen. I've read some of the young poems of Shelley. I've read some of the early poems of Hart Crane, stuff written when he was, say, 14 or 15. They're terrible. Keats's early stuff, even though he died at 26 and made that tremendous reputation for himself, but when he was 16 and 17, he was writing poems. They're terrible. I could write just as well when I was 16 or 17. It doesn't happen with some of the with the arts until I think a certain maturity is achieved.
Well, musicians.
But, yeah, right. Well, that's one thing. I cannot fathom Mozart, but that gets you somewhere else. You got stuff Mozart wrote when he was 12.
Yeah, I think I saw they discovered a new composition by Mozart when he was 9.
That's right, that's right. And he wrote his first symphony when he was 7, I think, or something like that. I have to pass on that one. There's a certain kind of genetic gift for music and a genetic gift for mathematics. There are people who can do incredible mathematical tricks by the time they're 7 or 8 years old, and I think there's a gift like that that some people get in chess.
Well, what do mathematics have to do with chess?
Very little, I think. But I think what I'm trying to say is it's an intellectual activity. You can do it with your head, not your heart. Is what I'm getting at. I think for enterprises that require some depth of feeling to do well, a kid can't do them. I think kids feel profoundly. I'm not trying to knock the emotions of kids, but stuff where I don't want to spin too many theories, but remember, every kid by the time he's 6 has learned a language, and that's an incredible thing. We learn this complexity of the English language, far more complex than anything involving composing music or playing chess. We are very good when we're children at learning certain to manipulate symbols and that kind of thing. And I think that's what goes into the fact that kids, if they have the gift and they learn at the right age, can learn it immensely well. Certainly this kid can, anyway.
In your book, there's a lot of discussion about the ratings of chess players. How are chess players rated?
They're rated on a numerical system, depending on the ratings of other players whom they play in U.S. Chess Federation licensed tournaments. I think the highest possible rating is now 2,700 and something. Or maybe 2,800. That was Bobby Fischer's rating when he left chess, and he was the highest rated player in the world. A beginning chess player is given an arbitrary rating of 800, and then hopefully he moves up as he continues to play in tournaments. So the rating rate ranges between, let's say, 800 and 2,800. My rating on that scale is 1,423, which puts me below the middle.
Obviously, there's no way to get a rating unless you play in the Federation.
You have to play in licensed tournaments, I think 16 of them. You have to play, not 16 tournaments, I'm sorry, I have to play 16 rated opponents. And that usually takes 2 or 3 tournaments to do it.
Why are the Russians so good?
Yeah, the same reason they're good in ballet, I think. They're paid to play. They do conduct talent searches in the better schools throughout the Soviet Union. They find kids who have a chess gift in the first, second, or third grade. And they're put under the guidance of well-paid professional coaches, and if they show a really stellar talent, they're by the time they finish what is called the secondary school in Russia, they're taken out, they're given salaries to play and practice and to study. Russia wants to dominate world chess the same way it wants to dominate world ballet, wants to dominate the Olympics, that sort of thing, and it's willing to put a great deal of money into producing the people who can win.
We had a chess champion from the Soviet Union who defected, and I cannot for the life of me recall
Victor Korchnoi.
Korchnoi, that's right. He was trying to get his family out. He's living in Switzerland now.
Yeah, right.
He told me that the KGB and other elements within the Soviet Union used all sorts of psychological pressures on him to make sure he would lose tournaments. They would have a man sitting in the front row staring at him.
That's called Korchnoi's complaint.
Yes, I used that line. Is this true, that when tournaments are played, are psychological pressures put on other players? And indeed, do the Russians do it?
I've never heard of anybody actually hiring a person to come in and put the evil eye on a player, the sort of thing that Korchnoi has complained about. Korchnoi also complained about colored yogurt being served to his opponent to signal to him if it's yellow yogurt, move the pawn. If it's green yogurt, move the bishop. That's right. I don't know. Perhaps it happens. I know that the psychological pressures in chess are enormous. One of the things that gave Bobby Fischer an edge was his overwhelming arrogance at the board and his ability to stare down almost anybody. That plus his reputation. So that Fischer could make a blunder on the chessboard and his opponent would be so trembling, fearing that Fischer was pulling a fast one on him, that he wouldn't be able to respond to it in an intelligent way. So there's a lot of psychological pressure, sure.
America has lost its best chess player with Bobby Fischer's abandonment of the game, huh?
I'm afraid so. I think the world has lost its best chess player. I think Fischer is probably the finest chess player who ever lived. A real Mozart of chess, a real absolutely dazzling wonder chess player.
How do you make that judgment?
Well, one thing about chess is that it's fully recordable. 19th century chess players' games are recorded move by move. So you have the games of great players like Paul Morphy or Steinitz or Capablanca or Lakin and the like, and you can play through them and you can see what moves the man made. Sometimes you can't see the reasoning behind the move, but you can see the brilliancies of former players. And you can compare them with Fischer's games, which are on record ever since he was 13 years old. And he's just dazzling. He is just absolutely overwhelming. My jaw has dropped in amazement at some of the things that man pulled on a chessboard. It's that kind of thing, too, that I really wanted to get into my novel. I know most people are going to look at that and they'll say, so what, it's chess, it's dull. But there's a tremendous, for me anyway, a tremendous thrill in that kind of thing if it can be made accessible. You know, this is what I was very much trying to do in this book. As with The Hustler. The Hustler came from my standing around in pool rooms when I was a kid and later when I was in college, watching all-night games of pool where guys would be playing for $500 a game or something like that. And the thrill, the excitement of that for me was just enormous. But when I would try to tell other people about it, they didn't give a damn. You know, so what? What else is new? Let's talk about basketball. That's where the thrills are. So I wrote that book partly, you know, to show people this is thrilling, this is exciting. You don't have to know the game to see how exciting it is. And I have much the same impulse in chess. I think there are some tremendous thrills there, and it's a tremendously exciting game.
You're absolutely correct, and indeed your book is filled with suspense because you're waiting to see what's going to happen next in ways that perhaps the average reader wouldn't expect because it is about chess. Who are the superior chess players today in the United States?
Yasser Seirawan is probably America's best player. There are several that are coming up close behind him. There's a young man named Joel Benjamin who is now only about 15, I think, and who was one of these child prodigies. I don't know whether Benjamin has yet got his international grandmaster title, but I believe he is a grandmaster, still at 15, still with a ways to go. I think chess players tend to peak in their 20s the same way that poets do, and somewhere in their late 20s. So Benjamin would have 10 more years to continue to grow and develop as a player. Here's the difference between America and the Soviet Union. If he can support himself that way, one problem is you've got to have a guy who is tremendously dedicated or has a tremendous psychological need to play the game to the point that he will forsake other careers. Because if he's that good at chess, he's usually smart enough to make, you know, five times as much money, say, doing engineering or something like that. It's very difficult for a chess player to make a living by playing chess.
That was my next question. Beth Harmon, of course, does make a living playing chess, but there aren't very many full-time chess players in the United States.
Not very many. There are a few. One of the best American chess players is Walter Brown, whom I got to know quite well some years ago. He's an international grandmaster and has been since he was about 20. He just came in, I think, second in the U.S. Olympic team in Switzerland a few months ago. Walter, as far as I know, makes his living gambling as well as by chess playing. And he's tremendous at bridge, poker, blackjack, and he's supposed to be one of the best people around at backgammon. And I met some other grandmasters in Las Vegas. These guys were doing awfully well playing the Thorpe system at blackjack, doing card counting, where a really superb gamesman can't actually give himself an advantage on the house. So that's one thing I thought about putting in the novel, was getting my girl in the novel into becoming a professional gambler. I decided that might complicate the book a little too much.
I'm
if I
glad
do a sequel, I'll throw that in there.
I'm glad you did.
Get her to be a blackjack expert.
Have you ever hustled anybody at chess?
No. I've played people for a couple of dollars a game, and I think my total winnings at that in a lifetime would be about $17, I think.
Are you still playing chess?
I play against a computer these days. I find the game too nerve-wracking when played against human opponents. So I have a portable, small but good chess computer.
How are these computers? Are they realistic opponents?
Oh, sure they are. They are astonishing. I bought mine, a Fidelity Electronics computer, at Macy's for $150 on sale, I think, $200 hardware or something. The thing's a whiz. It plays very, very good chess. It knows more openings than I know. It never makes a mistake, and it doesn't get tired.
Do you have to make the moves for it?
Yes. It blinks little lights telling you where to move them. Somebody does have a chess computer that has a little robot arm that picks the pieces up and sets it down. That'd be fun, but I understand it doesn't have a very good program.
Seems to me I saw a computerized chess set that doesn't have pieces, but has some sort of printed printout.
Or display. With LEDs or something like that. Yeah, I've seen them. I've not tried one of those.
That might be fun for airline trips or something like that.
I take my Fidelity machine on airplanes, and I have a lot of fun with it. It has little pieces. Each square has a little red light on it, and the lights blink to let you know what move it wants to make.
Who are your friends? Are they chess players?
No, none of my friends are. My friends are. When I was a college professor years ago, I used to play with my fellow professors. But I have a good friend in New York, come to think. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have forgotten to mention him. Stuart Morton, who runs a chess room, a game room, uptown on West on Broadway in the 80s. And I play chess with him every now and then.
Have you ever been a member of a club like the Marshall Chess Club?
Nope.
Have you ever wanted to do this?
Nope.
Since you began playing chess as a child, you must have been extremely excited about it because you've maintained your interest in it for so many years.
Yes. I think sometimes I get too excited about it. I think one of the reasons I haven't joined a chess club or gotten myself involved in it is I don't want to have the rest of my life taken up by that game. I'm just not willing to. It's a tempting substitute for writing fiction. In some ways it's easier because you don't have to make it up as you go along the way you do when you write a novel. And it does tempt me. But ultimately, I don't think I want to spend that much time.
When you wrote The Queen's Gambit, and there are so many games that are fully understandable, but at the same time, you had to plot these games. Did you create these out of your mind, or did you actually use games that
had
been played?
Some of them are recorded games. I took them from the same kind of master games I was speaking of earlier, games between Alaykin and Capablanca and whatever, carefully choosing obscure 19th century games or early 20th century games. And then I assigned it to my heroine.
What was Random House's reaction when you said, I'm writing a book about chess, or I have a book in hand about chess?
Believe it or not, they were thrilled. I sent them the book before I told them what it was, but they were quite excited about it. I had several publishers quite interested in the book. I was surprised. I made multiple submissions of it to Xeroxes to 10 publishers, and then went off to the Florida Keys while I was sweating it out. That was last year. And I was astonished that out of the 10 publishers I submitted it to, 4 were very eager for it, and all of them wanted it. So
as I read it, I kept trying to imagine it as a motion picture, but it would seem to me they would blow it, because part of the suspense of The Queen's Gambit is in the moves on the board. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, would likely be lost in a film.
I'm not sure. I'd like to try it. I've had a few people who've shown some interest, and if I can get some serious interest, I want to try doing a screenplay. I tell you, I don't think the excitement is quite as much in the moves of the game in themselves as it is in the feeling of the player making those moves. I don't really think I have, naturally, I couldn't imagine a movie audience or a reading audience to sit down and try to puzzle out what it means when you put the bishop on the fifth rank. You know, the hell with that. I don't care all that much. What I care is that that the character playing, when she's playing, she's taking a risk to do that. She's not sure the move is going to pay off. If it does pay off, it's going to pay off enormously. I'm interested in seeing its psychological effect on her opponent, what happens to his face when she moves like that, what she does, whether she gets up from the table or whatever. That interplay between people. And I think we had the same sort of thing that went on when we filmed The Hustler. I did the screenplay, or part of the screenplay for The Hustler. And the thing there was, it's not to give the audience an education in the game, it's to give the audience the illusion that it's involved in the game. But actually what you do is you see a lot, in that movie, you see a lot of balls moving around on the table, and you see, and then somebody does something that looks difficult, and then somebody else hands him the money, and you see that he's done something difficult, and then he's won. But you don't know exactly what it is. Well, the same thing can happen here, too. If somebody show a hand reach out and slam a chess piece down on the board, and the face on the other player crumple when he sees the move, you've expressed what you have to express. You know.
I'd like to see it done.